there.
Hello.
Thanks a lot for downloading Evil Little Goats episode 3.
Trace, numero trace.
Look at you, you're all bilingual.
Yes, that's right.
Well done. It's going to be a stone-heavy episode.
This is the Stone Gossard episode, if there was ever one.
It's the Mankind of Evil Little Goats.
Yes. The one song that doesn't sound like any other song because somebody other than Eddie Vedder is singing it.
Yeah.
Does this mean we should have hosts other than us?
Oh, we should have thought of that.
Oh, man. We should have invited Stone.
And Stone, I love you and all. Not one of my favorite Pearl Jam songs.
No. I bet it's only been played live maybe four or five times.
You think? Only four or five times?
I don't think it's made the set list too often.
Yeah.
It's a no-code track, though.
It is. Yeah,
there we go back to no-code again.
There we go back to no-code. So many issues.
Well, there are only 12 or 13 more tracks on no-code left that we can play, so.
That's true.
We'll eventually get to the rest of the discography.
I was listening to, I tweeted this earlier, I was listening to the, did we just call it the Avocado album?
Yeah, we call it Avocado. Yeah, it was called Avocado.
I forgot, I hit play on that one, because I was like, I haven't heard this one in a while. And the first couple songs, I was like, I thought I liked this more than I do. And then I got like two or three more in, and I was like, oh, wait, no. Oh, yeah. Yep. Okay. Good. Yes, I like this record. I'm a fan of that record.
Yeah, it's definitely much better than Riot Act. I believe it was the follow-up to Riot Act.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Been listening. I thought I'd listen to Riot Act before the show because I really like You Are. It's Matt Cameron song.
Yeah.
And Severed Hand came up on a boot that I was listening to. It. I was like, man, I forgot how good Severed Hand is.
Yeah.
Then I started listening to Riot Act, and I was like, no, this is my least favorite Pearl Jam
album.
Really? I mean, those two songs are great. You have to be in the mood for it, I think.
Let me see if I can remember which one You Are is. Oh, see, I love this one. This was my favorite song from the record.
Yeah, I know. My favorite, too. And I'm pretty sure Matt wrote the music, like this guitar lick, I think.
Wow. I did not know that. But yeah, this one was just heavy. And then the way it drops. Right there. How it does that. And then it goes.
Wow. That is perfect timing. That's wow. You were counting that off in your head. I could see the digits going down.
I have an amazing internal clock.
Yes.
Not really. By the way, I'm Jeremy here, and that's Travis, and this is Evil Little Goats. It's a new little Pearl Jam podcast that we started doing because, well, we like them a whole bunch.
Yeah,
so why not? We figured rather than just talk to each other about it all the time, we might as well let someone else in on the fun. So,
we're going to broadcast it onto the World Wide Web.
Yes, that internet, it's really catching on.
Thank you, Al Gore. Will the Al Gore jokes
never get
old?
It'll never stop.
Like, when is that from 2000 at least, or is that before? That was his campaign in 2000?
I think that was Yeah, sure. Let's go with that.
Was Eddie stumping? They were stumping for Nader. They weren't stumping for Gore.
Yeah.
They stumped for Kerry. Did they stump for John Kerry?
No. I don't believe they did. And I think there was even some division in the band over Obama because I think Eddie was still very Nader.
Right.
And everyone else was like, no, do you remember we... We tried that once, and that didn't work.
Remember that whole Green Party thing?
Remember that whole Bush won anyways thing?
Yeah.
That we shouldn't have. Anyways, not about the politics here. So you, being the big music rock and roll blogger hero that you are, you actually talk to these guys every now and then, and you get to ask them the hard-hitting questions.
I do, yeah. I get very lucky in that I have interviewed a couple of members of Pearl Jam, 3 out of 5, which has been kind of cool, been able to talk with them. And it's always a privilege and a treat for me to be able to speak to any artist that I'm a huge fan of or that I grew up listening to. And I think it took 13 or 14 years for me to actually – like for the Pearl Jam camp to pitch me an interview because I would never ask for an interview. I'm very, I don't know if humble is the right word because I think I have an ego.
Terrified.
I'm terrified. Yeah. Well, I recognize my place. I'm not Rolling Stone. I'm not Billboard. I'm not.
Right. You have integrity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that, you know, they only want to talk to me because they have I'm not going to get an interview with, you know, an hour or tour with the band. I'm not going to get like hang out on the tour bus with Eddie Vedder or anything like that. And I don't want that. I'm happy to be considered. So back in May, I believe, I got asked if I'd be interested in talking with Stone about his upcoming solo record, Moonlander. And I jumped at the chance. No. Yeah. So
are they still playing? I didn't know.
Yeah. So I jumped at the chance to talk with Stone, and it was a very it was a good experience, very positive experience. I had about 25 to 30 minutes on the phone with him. It's always weird doing phone interviews because you don't know what – you can't see the person. You can't read their reactions.
You can't see them roll their eyes.
You don't know what kind of day they've had, or you can't really do – I suppose you can do small talk on the phone, but I'm very businesslike. I'm very like, hey, let's get down to it. You're talking to me because you want something out of me. I want something out of you. I'm a fan. I'll tell you how big of a fan I am later. Let's just do this interview real quick. And then if – I don't feel like I've tripped over my words or made a fool out of myself, then I can thank you for your time and tell you that I love Pearl Jam.
See, the problem I run into when I've had similar experiences is I got to get the fan stuff out of the way. As I made very clear when we had Sean Smith on my other podcast, that turned into an hour of just, you're Sean Smith. That's awesome. What's that like? I mean, I just gushed over the guy because I would have a hard time getting to the questions because all I would want to say is you were the soundtrack of like 10 years of my life.
Well, and I think the difference with you and Sean is you had Sean in person.
That's true.
Now I've interviewed Mike in person, and it was very casual, and it was more of, the best interviews for me are like conversations like this where we're just talking and I say something, the other person says something back, and then I retort. So I don't know, if I would have had Stone in person, it might have been a little different. But it's tricky because, I mean, I know I interviewed, you know, here's a little humble brag for you. Back in 2005, I interviewed Chris Cornell on his tour bus. And I grew up listening to Soundgarden just like I did Pearl Jam. And it was an Audio Slave event in Everett for a show. And I got an hour. It was supposed to be 10 minutes for color to add spice to a review I was writing. I got an hour with Chris Cornell on a tour bus. I've got Chris Cornell doing vocal warm-ups on tape because he was warming his voice up while we were doing the interview. It was insane. And I'm just like sitting there as I'm talking to Chris Cornell, you know, I'm like, okay, this is a little surreal. But, you know, he's very friendly, very nice guy, and it was a good interview. And I wrote a good 2,000-word story about Chris Cornell on top of the review of the show I was supposed to write.
He does strike me as a guy who probably is still very grounded, even though, I mean, I know he does a lot of very big, fancy things that only rich people do. But I always own
his own clothing line in Paris and restaurants.
Or his own French restaurant and all that. But I just get the sense somehow from him that it hasn't – the rock stardom hasn't consumed him.
I think he's been through a lot of shit, just like everybody else. So that's kind of survived the grunge era.
Yeah.
And his band breaking up and getting like mega platinum status and kind of becoming these icons of rock and roll. And, you know, and when these guys were in their 20s, they could do whatever they had the groupies, they had the drugs, they had all that. They had the VH1 Behind the Music episode. And now they're in their 40s and they have families and everything's just kind of, hey, cool. I can afford to do whatever I want, however I want to, because I paid my dues. Although I'm sure they weren't. I mean, I'm not judging. I'm sure like drug addiction and having people die that were close to you from drugs and a lot of other stuff is very difficult. But, you know, it's not like they're working in a coal mine paying their dues.
That's true. He just – and I know we got to get back to the Stone thing in just a minute. But I was listening to – I believe it was Slacker Radio to a Pearl Jam station the other day. And one of the songs from Chris Cornell's first big solo album came on. And I can't recall the name of the album or the song, but my God.
Euphoria Morning is the name of the
record.
That's
the one, yeah. That album was so great. Mm-hmm. And everything that Chris Cornell does is, I remember from the single soundtrack, what was the one that he did solo on that soundtrack? Oh, I forget it. But it was so good.
It's a very good song, and I'm blanking on it as well. But I know the song, and I've got
listeners
it in my head.
They're throwing things at their computer. Right. You idiot! It's whatever it is. But just it's amazing just what an incredible musician and singer the guy is behind the massive wall of, you know, Soundgarden and that big heavy rock sound.
Well, and did you have a chance to see him when they played in February? Have you seen the reunion shows at all?
No, I only saw them once way back when, probably like 93.
I can tell you, I saw them in 95, and then I saw them again in 96.
Were you at the Kitsap County Fairgrounds show?
Yeah, I was.
Okay,
at
that's
that
the
show.
One I was at. Yeah. I saw them there and Lollapalooza.
Interesting side note about that story. I ran into Tad Doyle of the band Tad.
Yeah,
I see him around every once in a while, and he's just a fun guy to talk to, and he's very. Very, he openly talks about Tad, and I told him about that show. I was like, man, that show was so great. I had so much fun, you know. And he's like, yeah, people were throwing bottles of piss at me at that show. Somebody filled up a 2 liter of Pepsi and threw it at me. It was filled with piss. And I was like, oh, man, that must suck. Because he's an easy target to hit, you know, especially with a 2 liter. You know,
yeah.
You can't miss. No. So I'm sure he got hit with it, or at least maybe, you know, there was some spillage. So, but
gross.
No, I saw them in 95 and I saw him. I was lucky enough to go to the first reunion show at the Showbox, the New Dragon show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I can tell you that they were as good as they are now back in the 90s. There's very little, I mean, Chris doesn't get quite as high with his voice, mm-hmm. but they're as powerful. It's as much of a great experience, which is awesome. It's something that I wish like a band like Led Zeppelin would have done.
Yeah.
You know, of course they couldn't really do that now, but
when to see them, to see such a big act in such a small venue like that.
Yeah, well, and that was really cool because, again, I was lucky enough to get a VIP ticket, so there's a whole VIP side of the bar, and like Mark Arm and Chris Ballew and Jeff was there, Ament. We probably should just go by first name.
You're just rubbing elbows.
Well, I was just like, oh, hi, nice to meet you, shaking hands. And like a couple nights before was the Brad and Friend show.
Oh, okay.
So the drummer for Mother Love Bone, whose name I forget, and a bunch of other of those type of grunge luminaries were all there. And I was talking with them, just like having casual conversations. And it was kind of cool because, like, you know, in my brain, I'm doing backflips. I'm like, dude, I just shook Mark Arm's hand.
Yeah.
And I grew up listening to Mudhoney, you know.
Yeah.
Mark Arm doesn't give a fuck who I am.
Right.
He doesn't even remember meeting me. All I did was say, hi, nice to meet you. I'm Travis. But, like, at the time, I'm just like, oh, my God, I've talked to Mark Arm, you know.
I was at a party where he was once. Like, we had a mutual friend. And I just remember going, oh, is Mark Arm getting a beer out of the refrigerator? What? Where am I? It was a very strange.
By the way, this is a Pearl Jam podcast.
Yeah,
right?
in case you didn't know. Well, let's get
these
back
are
to
all
Pearl Jam.
These are all. This is all Pearl Jam by you know, Family Tree. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it all ties in. Speaking of very casual conversations with you, rubbing elbows, hobnobbing with the band, you actually did talk to Stone Gossard.
I did, and like I said, he's got a record called Moonlander coming out June 25th, which when you listen to this, if you're listening to it the day it's the day I expect it to be posted, it'll be coming out tomorrow. So it's a record he worked on for the better part of 10 years. He worked with Pete Droege and a bunch of other folks that are kind of local music, Regan from Brad,
mm-hmm.
And a bunch of other of his friends kind of put this record together and songs that he played with for years. And the first question I asked him was why it took so long to make the record.
You know, these songs, a lot of them have been kicking around for quite a few years. So it's sort of like getting done cleaning your basement after a 10-year period. It's like, there's some work involved, but when you've got everything organized and you sort of pulled out the stuff that you don't like and just restacked all the stuff that you do like so that you can bring your friends down and show them, it's a little bit like that, I suppose. So it's a relief, and I love recording. I love rock songs. They're just great little compact art projects. You know, they don't last too long, and They have melody and they have words and you can tell a story and you can dance to them or you can move and the form of a rock song is just it's a great form.
Yeah, so that was what Stone had to say about the record, the process of creating the record, and I liked how he phrased it. You know, compact little. What do you say? Like
pieces of art,
like a small little art project.
Yeah.
That you know, and I never really thought about music like that because it is really like each song is a work of art. So
that's something that's always kind of fascinated me from the listener perspective. And my wife is an artist; she does photography and painting and that kind of stuff. But as a song, I've always wondered how do you know when it's done? Because you can literally do anything infinitely to music.
Yeah.
And arrange it with, I mean, you could bring in 10 more instruments and go, oh, it needs horns and a cymbal and a, you know, whatever. So I'm always fascinated when these guys, it must literally just be a deadline of this album's got to be out on this date. So this one's got to be done enough and I've got to move on.
Yeah. And he actually did a lot of that. If you listen to the record, it's disjointed in a very good way. Like, there's not really a cohesive sound on the album. There's ballad songs. There's kind of twangy stuff.
So you've heard the whole thing?
I have, yeah.
Uh-huh, okay.
There's upbeat songs. There's bluesy-ish songs. It's a little bit all over the map. And if you put it into that lens of, well, he made it over 10 years,
yeah,
you know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And they actually are some really interesting instrumentation. There's woodwinds. There's horns.
Wow.
There's some different stuff going on there. And none of the songs that I heard on the record, I don't think would fit with Pearl Jam.
Interesting. Well, there's much more here.
Yeah, no, totally. Something I like to ask a lot of the folks I interview, especially when they have story-driven songs, there are some story-driven songs on Moodlander, is I like to ask if they're writing from an autobiographical perspective or if they create characters and kind of put those characters in situations and write about that. And this is what Stone had to say.
I mean, both. I mean, I tried to, wherever the inspiration was going to come from, I think sometimes telling stories directly from just experiences I had or you know, watching something on TV and sort of relating to that in some way and trying to tell that story to a song or sometimes just letting the words kind of get in my head and not knowing exactly what they were about, but just, you know, you keep singing it until it reveals itself to you a little bit. So, you know, maybe it's a melody to start out with and there's a couple of words that sound good in that melody, and then as you start to kind of explore more about those words, then they lead to other words and other words, and so it's a real sort of discovery process.
So it sounds like it's more the song, at least for him, and maybe he's just talking about this album. The song kind of writes itself, like it almost just kind of comes to him, and so he is more just the delivery system.
I've never written a song in my life. I don't know what that process is like. You know, I might be able to if I tried, but like it kind of makes sense though. Maybe it's not just what word rhymes with this word, but mm-hmm. like what do I want to say or what's coming to me? How do I feel? How do I express that in words or how do I express that with music?
Yeah,
and that's I guess that's how Stone operates.
It's interesting.
And one of the songs on the record, let's play a little bit of the song. I know I said I didn't want to play it because it's kind of slow and a downer, but we could maybe play the first minute. It's called Remain, and it's kind of a slow song, and it's a little it's the heart of the record. It doesn't really have it's a little sad, but it spoke to me, and I asked Stone about it, and we'll find out what he had to say.
He followed me home in the rain. He stood on the porch. I invited him in, stayed on the couch, we became friends. Now that he's gone, what's there to say? I'll never doubt why we met. How will remain.
Kind of reminds me of Off He Goes.
Okay, yeah. I could hear that. It's a little...
kind of a similar message of loss, I think.
Said I'd see you on the flip side.
Yeah.
A little bit of...
But no, very very solid.
It's a melancholy, kind of sad.
Much better than Mankind.
You think so?
I think so.
See... And you're the guy who likes angry Pearl Jam.
When I was younger, I'm telling you. Now that I'm older, I want to slow it down. I want to sit on the porch. I want to sip a beer with these guys.
Well, it just sounds sad, though.
It does.
So I asked Stone.
Well, it's kind of sad that I'm in my mid-30s and I want to sit on the porch and have a beer with Pearl Jam, too. So.
Oh, man. Then that makes me extremely sad. That makes me like suicidal sad.
But you asked him about this tearjerker.
I asked him about the song, and this is what he had to say.
You know, that's a little bit more of a personal one that I don't really want to divulge too much of kind of where it was coming from, but it's really about, you know, being touched by somebody in your life and also experiencing, a separation, and having that relationship, go away in a sense. So, sort of staying in touch with what was real about it and accepting its mortality, I guess.
I would assume that his secrecy, or I guess the private nature of this, would indicate that it's about somebody that we've probably heard of.
Well, that's why I asked specifically. I was like, well, the first thing that popped in my mind was, is this song about Andy Wood?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this song about Wayne Staley or anybody else, Shannon Hoon, or anybody that Pearl Jam's either toured with or knows personally that Stone might know? But I don't know anything about Stone's, you know, actual background. It could be about his uncle or something. It could just be about, the person could not be dead. It could just be about a friend that he had a falling out with.
Yeah, I got the impression that it was more something like that, because he said something about holding on to the parts of the relationship that were real. Like, I've lost friends, and all you kind of can hold on to is the part that you thought was the real part of it or whatever, and when it kind of ends because they just decide to be weird, then it's kind of sad that it ends that way.
So it's a really sappy
breakup song.
Diss track. It's Stone Gossard's diss track to against somebody, some nameless person that only he knows. So
yeah, he should have just called it "You Jerk."
Yeah, insert name here, jerk. Yeah, and so with the record, of course, a solo record, comes a possibility of solo shows.
Good point.
And I would go see Stone play solo.
This is why you're the pro. I would, you're touring. Oh, well, that heck of an idea.
Well, and at the time when, I mean, Pearl Jam, the members of Pearl Jam are also doing their own things. But
sure.
At the time when I did this interview, I had either just seen or was going to see Random at the Tractor, and Random was going to play a festival in California,
mm-hmm.
and there was the UFO show that was coming up, the Flight to Mars show. So there was a lot of activity in the Pearl Jam camp.
Yeah.
Matt, the word that Soundgarden was going to play in Europe in September. So I was like, well, what the fuck, guys? Everybody's doing something, and you're not doing stuff together. So I guess this means the album's going to be delayed, or there is no album, and you're just teasing us. So I didn't phrase it like that. I just asked,
"What the fuck, Stone?"
Yeah, it's like, Stone,
come on,
buddy. I just asked if there were any plans for solo shows, and this is what he said.
My plan. I don't have any plans right now to do any shows. I think I'm going to kind of watch and sort of get a gauge for how people are reacting to it and what songs are they reacting to. And, you know, at some point in my life, the idea of going out and doing some shows around this record sounds fun, but I would want to do it if there was really sort of an energy towards people being excited about it. And I'm just happy to just put it out for the time being.
So he knows only fans are going to listen.
Yeah.
And he just wants to know if, or at least that's, I mean, I don't think it's going to catch on. It's a good album, but none of the Pearl Jam side projects have caught on.
Yeah, even Brad, to some degree. I mean, I think that's probably the biggest.
I think so.
Success,
yeah.
And I mean,
Mad Season, which
yeah,
kind
I
of
that more of
kind
an
of doesn't
Chains.
Count.
Like I always put that more on Lane than anybody else. But if you're judging the reaction based on past side projects, I mean, if Brad is the bar by which you're setting whether or not to tour to support it, then you're staying home.
Yeah. And he seemed like it might be something like when Pearl Jam's done or when they're in their golden years.
Maybe he'll
show up at open mics or something.
See, I think he should just do that. I think that he should just one night just decide to go and open for somebody at the Croc, or like just go do something fun. Like he shouldn't do a full blown tour.
Well, he has the Hank Choir. Are you familiar with the Hank Choir?
Did they play at the Hootenanny for Haiti?
They did, I believe.
Then that's where I
They did a couple other shows at the Showbox. They did like they just show up at random, but it's just I think it's just Stone and a couple of his friends, and I'm sure that if I were to look at the names of the band members, I'd know who they were immediately.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking people like maybe Tim DeJulio or Kim Viron or like those kind of people that hang out in the Pearl Jam circles are probably part of the Hank Choir. And this is, listeners, you can contact us at evillittlegoatscast@gmail.com to let us know if we're wrong. Please do.
Yeah, please do.
And I'd love a fact check on that, actually. So.
On really on anything we're saying.
Yeah, no, please. we're being completely honest. We would love to be fact checked.
Speaking of Kim Virant, by the way, how amazing is she?
Oh my goodness!
One of the most underrated singers.
I just saw her perform Friday night at EMP.
Didn't she do the Woman
Who Rock?
Yeah.
And she did the Breeders' Last Splash. And she did another song, which I don't remember, but it was good. It was
and
Kim Byron.
And she's married to Chris Friel.
Yes.
Who was in Goodness. And is he
He
the
was
drummer?
In Shadow. He was the drummer.
Shadow.
Yeah.
That's
and he
one.
Was in Shadow.
Yeah.
So the Friel brothers go back. They go way back with Mike McCready to like Eckstein Middle School.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They talk about keeping it in the family with the Pearl Jam camp. Like Mike. He's kept his friends for a very long time.
That's all. And Chris Friel is one of the nicest guys in the world. He's just
I've only met Rick.
Oh, really?
But I might have met Chris in passing, but I met Rick once, and a friendly guy.
So, yeah.
So back to Stone.
And shows.
Yes. And it doesn't seem like he's going to play any solo shows.
Yeah.
But there are other shows. He has another band, Pearl Jam. Have you heard of him?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's in this other band.
Well, I ought to check them out.
And so we've talked about this before on, I believe, episode one. Go back and find it.
If it wasn't on one, it was probably
it's on two.
Two.
Is that how that works? We don't have quite a large back catalog to search
here. Not a lot
here.
Of sifting through to find these facts yet.
Yeah. So anyway, we talked about it briefly. I was wondering, you know, when I interviewed Jeff, the question I didn't ask, I wrote this long editorial on Gorilla Candy about, you know, has Pearl Jam forgot? It was called Parting Ways, as Pearl Jam forgot about Seattle. And it was like, why isn't Pearl Jam playing Seattle? Here's what they can do to make it up to us. They don't need to play Seattle, mind you. I was being very clear that they've done enough in Seattle for Seattle. But it just seems like, as a Seattle fan, it seems strange that they're not playing Seattle. And this is a whole other discussion. We've had this for the last two episodes. We're having this discussion now briefly. So
because it still stings.
It's still, yeah.
Let's
so
face it.
I didn't want to be confrontational with Stone. So I just asked him, how difficult is it for the band to play in Seattle?
You know, I don't know what the demand is. I really don't. I don't know how many tickets we sold. I would think that we sold, you know, two or three at the Key, maybe, or something like that at the most. But I don't know. Maybe there's something different that we're going to do. But there's no plans at this point. Just a general idea that we definitely need to play a hometown show.
That's completely naive to think that maybe you'd sell a couple at the Key.
Well, and that was the wrong quote, but we can go backwards.
Okay.
We can go backwards.
Oh, so, as it turns out, I skipped ahead.
That's all right. See, that's when I asked him, you know, I asked him if there were any plans for Pearl Jam to play Seattle. And as you heard at the end, he said there's definitely, he's optimistic that something would happen. He definitely thinks that Pearl Jam will be playing in Seattle. He doesn't know when or where. So, you know, that's that. And it was kind of, I wasn't expecting him to tell me, like, we're going to play Key Arena three nights in October.
Right.
You know, but I was expecting him to say, yeah, we'll be there. Don't worry about it. We haven't forgot about you, Seattle.
Should I play the clip then that we were supposed to play?
Yeah, this is what he said about how difficult it is to play in Seattle.
It's only difficult in the sense that, you know, your guest list is going to be out of control. I think that's the main, one of the main things. But, you know, it's Seattle is so good to us. It's important that we play here, and sometimes it's fun to kind of go out and just focus on the rest of the world and come home to Seattle and just be a normal person. So maybe there's a little psychological barrier that keeps us from doing more hometown shows, but I do believe that there's going to be some coming. So I don't know when, or I don't know the dates or anything, but I'm optimistic that that's going to happen.
It seems like they're just too early in the process to even...
Yeah, well, I asked, like I said, the interview was in April-ish, might have been March, but...
Yeah.
But it was when the band had announced there would be a fall tour, which is why I posed the question.
Yeah.
And you know, to play, to be fair to Pearl Jam, he did specifically say, you know, Seattle's been very good to us. You know, he's very aware. But at the same time, on the other end of the spectrum, that I want a Pearl Jam show, goddammit. You know, like play,
again, what the
play
fuck,
Seattle.
Stone?
Yeah. That maybe that'll be the title of this episode. What the fuck, Stone? Instead of Stone Gosser interview, because because that's more catchy. You know?
Looking for the headlines here, man. Come on.
Yeah. But no, it's like you want to give them the benefit of the doubt and definitely want to recognize all the money they've raised for local charities and the things they've done that have been good in the community. But you also want – it's time, guys.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Play Safeco. Play Clink.
Yeah.
Fill the place up.
Speaking of Clink, I just thought I'd point out to go back to episode one since we were so far. We were saying Questfield the whole time. That was my fault.
See, I still think of it as Questfield.
So do I. As I was listening back, I was like, crap, it's not Quest, it hasn't been Questfield for like 4 years.
Which is funny because for the longest time I still called it Seahawk Stadium after they called it Questfield. Just
make up your mind.
The Kingdome. They got to play the Kingdome.
Let's
build it.
So that was, you know, the extent of the conversation about the possibility of local shows in Seattle. Sorry, those of you who are listening outside of Seattle, I didn't ask about, you know, Duluth, Minnesota or anything like that.
Yeah, and we live in Seattle and we don't care about you.
Yeah, we can't. Oh, come on. You're alienating everybody before we even get a chance to gain fans. But, yeah, we still don't care about you.
Yeah, we still don't care.
But so one of my last questions that I asked Stone, I made sure that I saved I spent a good 20 minutes talking to him about his solo record, and I wanted to get a feel for the album, and it was just a thrill to talk to the guy, and I'm very lucky to get a chance to do that. And so I wanted to ask the program questions at the very end and be respectful of his current project. So I asked him what the status of the new Pearl Jam record is, and I asked him what it sounds like and when it's going to be released, and I got this.
It's almost done, and you know, as far as what it sounds like Pearl Jam. You know, you're going to hear some rock songs, and you're going to hear some quiet songs, and something in between. But that's all I can really say about it. You know, because we're not talking about it yet, so it doesn't make sense for me to do too much talking about it.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. The Pearl Jam record is going to sound like Pearl Jam. Way to go, Travis. That's a really great question. Yeah, I'm going to tell you how every single song sounds, and I'm going to tell you all the lyrics, and let me play one for you. Hold on.
The minute you hung up the phone, what did you think, or did you have I should have asked him. Did you have one of those?
Not really. I wrote down the way I've been doing, the way I do most of my interviews is I write down probably a good 10 or 15 questions, and I try to make like conversation. And if sometimes the questions just don't get asked, or just they get answered indirectly in another answer, so I skip over them. There wasn't much that I mean, I would have loved to have had more time with him.
Sure.
I mean, I ended the interview, not him. You know, I was like, okay, well,
I'm done with you. Be gone, sir.
Thank you for your time. You know, I wanted to be respectful of that. I didn't want to chew the guy's ear off, because I could have obviously asked him tons of questions.
What when you go to Denny's, what do you order?
Yeah. Where the fuck did you get the name Stone? He has a brother that's named like Leaves or something. Kind of like Rivers Cuomo. Rivers Cuomo's brother is named Leaves. I think Stone has a brother that's got a name like River Walk or like Stream or something like that. I think so. Again, Pearl Jam fact checkers.
Right.
I think that's in the Pearl Jam 20 book, which is where I
Google
read that.
It.
Yeah, Google it. So, but I was kind of, you heard me chuckle in that answer a little. I don't know. I was really hoping to get something.
Yeah.
I was hoping, like, because this is around the time, and there still is any piece of Pearl Jam news that I write about that's original gets picked up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I had this quote from Stone, and all these other outlets picked it up from, like, European outlets or, like, you know, different websites are like, oh, Stone Gossard says the new Pearl Jam record is almost done, and it sounds like Pearl Jam is going to have slow songs, fast songs, blah, blah. To me, that's saying nothing.
Right.
But when I got that answer, I was like, oh, dude. I was a little crushed because I thought maybe I'd get a little bit of a scoop, and I get a thrill out of stuff like that. The journalist in me is like, I like to have that kind of information.
Sure.
And really, it was a fine interview, and then I realized that Stone is kind of the sarcastic, dry-witted guy.
Yeah.
So I think a little bit of his humor kind of got me there.
That he was basically saying, "What the fuck, Travis?"
Yes, and I should have countered with follow-up question: "What the fuck, Stone?"
But since doing that interview, you have gotten a bit of an inside scoop on the fact that the record is done.
Done. The record is done. It just needs to be mastered, is what I understand. Just some small things mixed and mastered. A friend of the band that I know, talk with two members of the band, and one of the two members said the record is done. Mm. It's a public knowledge. So are we
thinking fall? Are we thinking fall? Because I think they'd hype it longer.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the current trends of the record industry with like the Daft Punk record that got all this buzz and ended up selling 300,000+ copies its first week, which is huge for Daft Punk and huge for the record industry. Mm-hmm. And then you have Nine Inch Nails, which kind of stealthily dropped the news they're coming out with a record. And that's not coming out until – do you know how much Nine Inch Nails tickets cost on presale?
What, $80?
GA floor, $112 after service charge and tax.
Why? Just
Yeah. But you know, have you seen Nine Inch Nails live?
No.
Amazing show.
Really?
They do amazing audiovisual shit, and the every single performance is like, you are so blown away by Nine Inch Nails.
I've always been way too terrified to go.
Oh, no, man. It's you shouldn't be. Trent, I'm sure Trent's just a warm and fuzzy.
Oh, yeah. It's all Care Bears at his house.
Care Bears and unicorns. Yeah. They're all black, though.
Right, and they've all been stabbed.
Yeah, some stuffing missing. But no, it's I don't remember. How do we bring this back to Pearl Jam?
The album.
The album. Yeah, I'm thinking the album's coming out next year.
Yeah,
I really don't think it's going to come out because they'll Christmas. If they wait till winter, they're going to have Christmas time records to compete against. I don't know if they're going to deal with. I don't know how they approach record sales. If that's a big thing for them, I assume they want to be number one. I assume they want to sell the most records that they can during the first couple of weeks. And so, if they release in January or February, they might not be that much competition.
Yeah.
And if that works for them, I think that's what they should.
I'm saying early February with a big old tour. They go everywhere. They're playing small towns, big towns.
No. I say they're playing one-off festival dates and select tours, whoever gives them the most money.
Yeah.
You know, they'll do a small tour, and then maybe they'll go to Europe again. I think the days of the journeyman tours.
Didn't they just do like 100 shows in South America? It seemed like every day there was like, now we're in Brazil, and now we're...
Yeah, no, they played Lollapalooza Chile, and they played Lollapalooza Argentina, I think. Or maybe it was Brazil. I don't know. They played a couple Lollapaloozas in March in South America.
I forgot. I always thought that Lollapalooza was just a one-city thing now. I thought it was just Chicago?
Yeah, Chicago. Perry Farrell expanded it.
So he
decided to go international. They tried to do Lollapalooza in, where was it? Like, it was an Islamic nation. I think it was Israel. I almost want to say it was in that corner of the world. But I believe it got canceled.
I was going to say, would 8 people show up?
Yeah. Well, I think it was just. I think the government might have shut it down.
Yeah. Well, that's our time. We'd mentioned possibly being able to kind of run through what some of the other guys are up to. You mentioned Random, obviously Jeff Ament's side project that's going around. Matt Cameron playing obviously with Soundgarden, and now the Drumgasm thing.
Drumgasm. I'm really excited about this.
What is this deal?
It's three drummers. It's Matt. It's Janet Weiss, who is in a band called Slater Kinney. Which are friends with Pearl Jam. They're Carrie Brownstein of Portlandia was a singer, and Janet was a drummer. And she's also in Quasi. She's in Stephen Malcolm Smith and the Jicks. She's in a couple other bands. She's in Wild Flag, of course. And then also the drummer from this band called Hella. And they're kind of this and also Death Grips. And it's just a hard rock band. It's like a – so the three of them got in a room and just – threw down.
Pounded the hell out of it.
They just destroyed drums. I just expect this. I visualize just complete carnage.
And bloody hands.
Yeah. And they recorded an entire record. And I believe this was done in 2006. At least news of it, if you go back, like if you do a Google search of like Weiss, Cameron, and whatever the other guy's name is, or Drumgasm or whatever, this message shows up on the Red Mosquito message boards, this thread of from 2006, and is talking about that.
Wow. Okay.
So it happened a long time ago. I don't think it's anything new.
Okay.
But it's coming out on vinyl, and the vinyl comes with a download code. I'm curious to listen to it. I don't know if I'd own it. I'm excited to hear it, though.
Yeah. And then who are we missing here? McCready, you mentioned on one of the previous shows, he's just kind of everywhere.
Yeah, Mike's everywhere. If you're at Seattle, you can go to the, I think, the Wishlist Foundation, or maybe the Crohn's Colitis. Am I saying that right? Colitis? Crohn's? CCFA. CCFA.org.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're doing a Mike McCready bobblehead night at Safeco Field.
Right. When is
on
that?
On Friday, the 28th of June.
Okay.
So it's this Friday, if this is coming out on June 24th.
Yeah.
Spoiler, we just a little bit about the magic behind this. We record these in advance.
Right. This is not live.
Not live.
This is not happening right now, although it kind of is.
Yes.
And then Eddie just played a big thing for Bill Clinton.
Yeah, good old Ed.
Four-song set at, I don't know where it was, but it was in New York, and it was for Bill Clinton and Ben Affleck's little Eastern Congo initiative.
Well, and you know, Ed did this stuff, a UK fundraiser for Obama in Florida, I believe.
Really?
And this was during election season last year.
Okay.
And he got paid like $1 million, and it was like four songs. And it was all, you know, political money. So all these people are, you know, it's like $100,000 a table or something.
Well, yeah.
Like
why get the band back together if you're going to get $1 million to go do four songs by yourself?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's what the band's up to, everybody.
Do you want to end with a song, or should we just
let's end with a Stone song.
Let's end with I Want Something Different off the record, off the new record.
Okay. Then I need to find that.
That's where the other song was.
There it is. Yeah. There we go. All right. So we'll do this.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, episode 3 of the Evil Little Goats podcast. I'm Jeremy, and that's Travis. The website.
GorillaCandy.com.
Yeah, and not spelled like the monkey.
No.
GorillaCandy.com. If you can't get enough of me, my other little podcast, TheSiblingRivalry.com. Less Pearl Jam, more fart jokes is kind of the gist
Ray.
Of that one. So here is I Need Something from Stone Gossard on the Moonlander album. Out tomorrow, people. Even though this isn't live. Okay. We'll see you next week at GorillaCandy.com. Bye-bye. It knocked me off my feet. Just the other day.